There we
Like it's recording.
Okay. So it is June 30th, and this is the UCF-UFF bargaining team meeting with the UCF-BOT bargaining team, and we are doing collective bargaining today. So I guess the first order of business, as always, is to review the minutes. Do we have minutes from the last meeting? Well, we did a lot last meeting.
We did. Like.
Does anybody have any corrections to the minutes they wish to make?
I think we had a lot of things. Yeah. You were fine.
Yeah, I think it looks.
Looks good?
It looks good.
Yeah.
One of the things I wanted to point out is that we have Zoom scheduled until September 1st.
Uh-huh.
Okay. And I think that's what we had talked about before, Talat. I just wanted to make sure that was.
That's what we are hoping.
Right. And you can see we already had some conflicts with trying to schedule meetings physically. So that's why we like to schedule them so far in advance, because that gives us the rooms.
Right. Oh, I see. So 13th, you couldn't get it and so on. Yeah. All right. Looks good. I think the dates look good too.
Okay. Well, if there are no corrections or changes to the minutes, then they will be accepted and we will move on to the first order of business on today's agenda.
Yeah, and I added an item there just because I wanted to make sure that we were all on the same page. And so I have, if you see the agenda, then, and I'll read it out aloud so we have it for record. So basically, we are awaiting proposals on, I'm not counting the last ones, on 7 articles. That's 4, 8, 13, 16, 19, 24, and 31. I don't think we have presented 31, although.
Not 31, that's been presented already.
Was 31 presented?
Yeah, I sent you an update, Talat.
Oh, okay. So it was, oh yeah. Okay. Fine. So it was presented.
It was.
All right. Okay. I know you did send an update. So, okay. Sorry. I should have referred to that. And then articles with changes proposed, but not yet fully accepted, in the sense that we had a few words here and there that we differed on. And no. Some of them we differ on more than a few words, mm-hmm. because I have 6 over there. So 6 you guys have presented, and then 3, did we agree on 3? Are we all done with 3?
We presented a proposal and we're waiting for your response to it.
Okay.
I put a list in the chat of the ones that have been proposed but are not fully accepted yet.
Okay. All right. Yes. So that's good. Thanks a lot, because I had missed 17. All right. So, right. And 1 also. Thank you. Okay, good. So now that's the, okay, that's good. I'll update mine. You probably updated it already in the thing you sent me. Is that right, in the agenda?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So it's all there. All right. I think, Charlie.
Talat, I had one addition to Charlie's list, the articles with changes proposed. Your list does not include Article 23, which we proposed.
Oh, right. It's on discussion on budget timeline, but you're right. That is
just to be complete.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Good. I think 1, 3, 6, 9. Yeah. 4, 14. All right. I think. But then Charlie, you have 31 in the, not fully accepted. Got it. I think we're on track. I think, So we'll work with this and we'll see where we go. So
I was thinking of 23 as something that we can't even talk about yet, John, and that's why it's in another place in my head. But you're absolutely right. A proposal has been made, but not fully accepted. I mean, we haven't even been able to get to the acceptance place. That's why it wasn't in my head there, but technically you're right. It's there.
Right. Because, you know, as far as our bargaining unit is concerned, they will fire us if we didn't have it to you guys. So it's in your court.
Well, we don't want you fired, so do what
that's
you
right.
No, that's no.
Right. That's exactly it. Okay, so now it's you guys' turn for Article 20.
Okay, I think I'm going to be the one talking about Article 20 for us. And what I want to do is try to share a screen here. And hopefully you can see this. Okay. Charlie, is that big enough?
Not really. there, yes. Now
okay.
You have me now. It's much better.
All right, well, first of all, Talat and your team, we'd like to thank you for the version of Article 20 that you gave us last time. It was very helpful to see what you were thinking about, and we, as you'll see, have incorporated many of the things that you had talked about, and there actually are some things that you alluded to that I think we're responding to very positively, but it's in a more complete fashion, that there's things having to do in particular with email that show up in multiple places in the article. So I'd like to just go through the changes that we proposed. And these are changes that we've input to the status quo version of the article. So beginning on line 5, it seems to us that there's a word there that is extraneous. It's totally unnecessary. So we're recommending that we remove this word, but that appears there.
Makes sense.
And then the next change we have is on line 38. What we would like to do is clarify sort of how we've been operating recently, that if a grievance is submitted and the grievant is alleging that a dean is the one who is has violated the collective bargaining agreement, we have been bringing those to step 2 from the outset. Because really, if it's the dean, and we mean the dean, not an associate dean, but if it's the dean in a college that is alleged to have violated the collective bargaining agreement, we think that should go to step 2, and it should be somebody at the university level who's reviewing that. That's how we've been operating. This would just make it official and include it in the collective bargaining agreement. We don't have any issues with associate deans who may have violated a collective bargaining agreement or have allegedly violated a collective bargaining agreement being reviewed at step 1 by another associate dean, even a dean someplace. So we would say that would stay at step 1, but step 2 would start with violations alleged to have taken place due to actions by the deans. Mm-hmm. And then on 57 and 58, you can see that we're accepting the suggestion that we include submissions by email. We're hoping to add a clarification that emails received after 5 p.m. local time will be deemed to have arrived the next business day. That's how it would have worked if things were handed in person. So that seems not too terribly controversial to us. Line 62. There's a reference to Article 16, and it's done in kind of a funny way. Part of the title of Article 16 appears before Article 16. A more complete but not fully complete title for Article 16 appears afterwards. We're just suggesting, let's just get rid of it and clear this whole thing up. The title of Article 16 is rather long. If we just call it Article 16, we think that will take care of it. And then line 108, this is a change that really follows up from the notion of accepting email submissions. There's no postmark per se on an email, but there is a timestamp on an email. So we want to recognize, just as we would recognize a postmark as an official indication of time, the timestamp on an email would as well. And there are going to be a number of places where that's going to come up in here. The timestamp is going to be a recurring theme. In lines 103 and 104, there's a little clarification that grievances shall be filed in academic affairs on the appropriate form in the appendices. So we've got appendices. I believe it's appendix C for step one, appendix D for step two. So that's intended just to clarify things a little bit. And then in lines 158 and 159, we're suggesting that we have a summary of the meeting and the conclusions of the meeting by a university representative for the step one process when a grievance is submitted. What we're hoping is that this will actually move things along a little bit more quickly if the document that needs to be prepared at step one is not as substantial as it typically has been. This could keep the grievance process moving along a little bit better. So we think that's advantageous for all of us if we can keep these things moving along.
Can I jump in here just for a second? I think the other thing that we're trying to do here is we think that step one is really sort of the informal process. I don't know that we want it to be, this is the time when you can get together in the college and try to solve it, you know, and we're not trying to make this like a mini step two where everybody has to bring evidence and you write this long complicated decision. And it's especially difficult because it's usually somebody in the college who's hearing it who is not, has no training as a grievance reviewer, and it's hard on them, it's hard on us to get them trained up, because our step two reviewers are people who typically do this and they, you know, they've had experience and training and they know what they're doing, and that's really the place where you're trying to get everybody's best argument put forward and get your best decision written. What we're looking to do is make the step one a more informal process, and this seems to facilitate that in our mind. So,
okay.
Thank you, Sherry. Related to that, on line 164, we're suggesting that we change decision to document, that rather than a formal decision document or a formal decision. I guess document is still a good word, but it really is saying it's not as rigorous a decision as we would normally think when we
Charlie,
the way we've done it in the past.
Are you guys implying then that basically after step one, if things are resolved, then that this will take care of it? That would be the summary. And if it needs to go to step two, then the individual will know right then that that's what's happening.
Well, there still will be some time after the meeting for the university representative to come up with a document that summarizes the meeting and the conclusions. It does not mean that everything will be decided on the spot.
But I think it also means that there will be documentation in writing of a summary of the...
Yeah.
The summary of the arguments and a conclusion that's drawn without having it be a very formal thing as basically like what Chuck said was a mini step two. It's much more
So the conclusions are not going to be different in the one that comes a month later.
You'll still get all the information, I think, will be encapsulated just more succinctly perhaps.
Okay.
All right, and then in 179 and 180, again, since we both want to see email be an acceptable mode of communication, we just want to put that 5 p.m. deadline in there and use the word timestamp again, that would tell us when it was.
Paulette, can I ask a question real quick?
Sure.
So, Chuck, I noticed in your previous comment about the timestamp, I think you said like 5 p.m. local time. This is a really small thing, and that this one doesn't. So a recommendation, you know, would be, I think we agree that the parties kind of operate on Eastern Standard Time or Eastern Daylight Time or Eastern or something like that. I think that may be a better substitution rather than maybe local time.
I did have EST, and Chuck informed me that I would need EDT under certain times. So, but ET seemed like it didn't. Most people wouldn't know what that was. So we left the earlier one as an explanation of when we were considering it to be local time. But if you want to add local time, we're happy to do that. It's not. Yeah, we're not trying to change anything.
Like, no, right.
I hear you. We had the same thought, so maybe it does. We need to add that. That's fine.
Maybe we can just have a sentence where an overarching sentence of the time zone time period.
We can put it in the dictionary, actually.
It's Orlando. I would just say Orlando time.
Orlando time. There you go.
That's
just
fair.
Ask Google what time is it in Orlando.
But, all right.
It was just a
points well taken.
Yeah, John, we can probably put that in 32, the definitions, and then we'll leave it. But we hear you. We had the same kind of feeling, so we're on the same page.
Okay, thank you.
195, 196 timestamp again. 204 and 205 is to indicate that notice of arbitration is Appendix E in the CBA. 210, we got another timestamp. 248 and 249, in a case where an arbitrator has decided that employment for an employee who's brought a grievance should continue, when that happens, the person continues in a non-tenure earning capacity according to the CBA. The CBA says that by the end of the sixth year, an employee has to either be granted tenure or notified that they're on a terminal contract. So if somebody's going beyond the sixth year, an arbitrator may reinstate them. But they would not be in a tenure earning capacity according to the collective bargaining agreement. And then we've accepted the deletion that said email was not acceptable. We want to include email, and we're on 294, we're just saying, you know, all documents. You may have done something similar to that. And 301 and 302, we're including the RV at email. So I think we're on the same page when it comes to email. And then on the processing, we looked at the state statute about grievances and arbitration and so forth. And what we'd like to do is propose an addition that says, if there is a question of timeliness, the grievance may proceed, but the question of timeliness must be resolved before the matter is considered further. So for example, if there is a question about the timeliness of a submission, the first thing the reviewer is going to consider is the timeliness. It's the same thing that happens in arbitration. The first thing the arbitrator considers is whether it's timely. If the decision is that it's timely, the grievance proceeds. Otherwise, the grievance would terminate at that point. But this is now a decision about the timeliness is made by a reviewer of the grievance. It's not made by the Academic Affairs Office.
I guess if I may add to that, that means if there's a disagreement with the reviewer's decision on timeliness, it can be filed at the arbitration level. So we're not getting in the way of something going to arbitration ever. Does that make sense?
Yeah, we'll take a look at that. Yeah, I think so. Basically, what you're saying is that we won't quarrel over that and say, you know, we can't proceed. But that this will be, that timeliness must be resolved at some point.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Immediately. Yeah, that's the immediate question, is timeliness. Yeah.
I have a question. And so I understand that the second sentence in terms of the question of timeliness and so on and so forth. So why is the first sentence still there where a university representative may refuse consideration?
If the grievance is filed and they're not grieving any articles, for instance, they're grieving something outside of the scope of the CBA, then there's nothing to discuss for a violation. So it's for a kind of a different thing.
So I think we'll suggest the language. I think I got the sense of it. We just need to say if the refusal is on the question of timeliness, that's what you mean.
Okay. Right? Yeah, I was thinking in terms of the timeliness, but thank you.
No.
Thank you for the clarification.
Yeah, that's a broader question.
Yeah.
Okay.
The UFF brought in the idea of timeliness, and we were trying to respond to that in a way that aligns with the statute, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
I think we're on the same page. Really, it's just a question of making sure that we are. Okay,
thank you.
And then finally, there was an addition to this article that was proposed by the UFF, and our side would prefer to not make that addition and stick with status quo in that section of this article.
Oh, which one was it? Okay. Yeah, okay, we'll see. We will take a look at what we had said.
That's our 20.
So, Talat, to refresh everybody's memory, our addition was about implementation of the resolution of the grievance. So we proposed a timeline for a remedy of within 7 days. So just to make your position clear, so you're not in favor of any type of timeline in the contract for implementation of a remedy.
John, there's no problem that solves. Essentially, we haven't had a problem with, you know, the university dragging its feet on making good with the resolutions. We've always moved forward with them, even when we're not happy with the outcome. We've always moved forward, and sometimes 7 days isn't a reasonable time frame. So rather than box ourselves in, we're not solving a problem with that language as far as we considered.
Okay, thank you.
Anything else on 20?
No, I think that's it. We'll take a look. It looks like we should be in good shape.
Yeah, Chuck, you can stop sharing, I think.
Thank you for reminding me.
And Sherry, I think you're up on an update on whatever you might be able to share on the UCF budget timeline.
Okay. I did have a meeting with, Maureen Bender and I met with Rebecca Richards, who is the budget director for academic affairs, and with Donna Dubuque, I never can quite pronounce her name right, who is the budget person on the non-academic side of the house. That's not very elegantly phrased, but last week, and they are in the process of preparing the budget right now. As you may or may not know, we are, with our new our new CFO, we are doing our budgets completely differently than we have ever done them before. We're going to a form of zero-based budgeting. And we're trying to clean up some in-house problems that we've had over the years that have put us in kind of a bad place. So they have told me that they asked for what UFF had proposed for salary increases. They wanted to know what ASME had proposed. We told them they are figuring out what that would mean in actual dollars for both sides, and starting with the 3.5% that UFF proposed, but also looking at smaller amounts just to get to see where, what we might be able to afford. The budget recommendation will go to the August Board of Trustees meeting, and we will know sometime the end of July or the first week in August of what they're going to propose. Before that, I may get somebody may give me a heads up or tell me, look, this is what we're proposing. These are the parameters you have to work with at the bargaining table. But I may not know until right before that thing goes to the board, because they told me that next year they're going to be starting to work on the budget way, way earlier. But this year, because we had all these changes and, this was the schedule we've always been on, that we're not going to get much good, we're not going to get budget news any earlier than we typically do. Next year, we will get budget news much earlier because they're starting much earlier. They're going to be on a whole different calendar for determining the budget. So that's all I can tell you. I don't know any more about, what they're thinking of. I just know that they are at least costing out proposals for a salary increase. We also, in addition to the faculty side of the house, as you know, Florida legislature, we amended our Florida Constitution to require that everybody be paid at least $11 an hour now and be raised to $15 an hour within several years. And so we are having to grapple with that to get our lowest paid people up to the constitutional minimums. So all of those things are figuring into the budget calculations, and I wish I had more news. I wish I had news for me, because I haven't gotten a raise in a couple of years either. But I can tell you that tomorrow will be July 1st. I think within a month I will have some idea, pretty close to an idea of what is possible. And as soon as I know, I will be putting together a salary proposal. But I think everything is pretty much on the table at this point.
So Sherry, just so that we understand it, so we know that there were some issues with the payment for the buildings and so on and so forth. Is that what is being taken into account right now, that basically we take care of all of our loans and debts and so on?
Well, yeah, we had a very bad habit in at UCF of giving what we called internal loans to various entities mm-hmm. that weren't really loans. And so those things have been a real drag on our budget for a long time, and they won't be cleaned up in 1 year, of course, but they're trying to get a new type of budget in place so that there is an orderly way of paying these things off. Quite frankly, we found out a lot of things through that Colburn Hall mess that we've just been doing wrong for a lot of years. And so I think that we have not always done well with our auxiliaries, because we have treated them all alike and they're not all alike. So for example, CDL, as you know, is an auxiliary funded unit, but it has a dedicated funding source because there's a fee that funds those salaries and those costs. But for things like student housing, which is an auxiliary, or the creative school, there's no dedicated funding source for those. So they are in essentially like a CNG employee. They have to eat what they kill. So if they aren't operating in the black, they, in the past, we've just sort of let those things slide and figured out we could sort of rob Peter over here to pay for Paul this year and hope nobody noticed and I could recoup the money by the next year. And I'm probably saying more than I should in a public meeting, but it's not, you know, any big secret that we have not been the best at budgeting over the years. And so we're having to, you know, repair some damage and get people on an actual, a real budget, like a household budget would be, or any normal business or other state institution, because other universities do not do things the way we have done in recent years. So.
Okay. So just out of curiosity, is this coming from some one-time funding that, you know, how do we get to zero base?
Well, I mean, it's a mix of one-time funding and
readjustment so that every unit has its own budget in a certain sense. And
yes.
Okay. And that kind of reshuffling is going on and so on, and that will go on for another month before we know.
Yes. Yeah. And that will be the baseline from which we start for years going forward.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Recalculating, we're resetting our whole budgetary process. Okay. Sort of like we're doing with the PeopleSoft, throwing out that and starting with where they're calling it Workday or something. I mean, you know, it's just a massive, it seems to me like every time I turn around, we're just massively reinventing everything at this university, but yeah. Some of it has been needed. We've needed to do it for a very long time.
So the raises that we're talking about here, about the staff, about A&P and faculty and so on, those are all going to be decided more or less about the same time.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, decided maybe isn't the right word.
Or whatever we're talking about. I mean, we'll be all talking about it around the same time.
Right.
Yeah.
Because there will be a proposed budget that will go to the Board of Trustees at their August meeting. And of course, can make changes, but, you know, that's what the president will present to the board at that time.
Okay. Do you know when that meeting is?
I don't off the top of my head.
Okay, but middle August or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, it's on their website.
But. Okay, that's fine. They will find it. Don't worry about it. Any questions from anyone?
I did have a question to Lot.
Yeah.
Sherry, our proposal was for a multi-year salary proposal.
Mm-hmm.
Will your proposal address kind of multi-year or no, single year?
I don't think there's any way we'll do a multi-year this year. I think that is for the first time going forward, we might actually in years to come, might be able to think about doing a multi-year deal because we will have, if this budget model works the way it's intended to, we'll have a much better idea of what monies we're actually going to have to spend year over year. Right now, we've never known from one year to the next. And some of that has been because we don't know what the state's going to give us, or more likely in recent years, what they're going to take from us, because they haven't been giving us much of anything. And that will always be a worry, frankly. But we also didn't know what we had internally. And we will know at least what we have internally to spend. And, you know, then we'll have to fill whatever gaps we need to from the state. But hopefully we will have a much better way of budgeting and planning year after year than we've had in the past.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, Talat, you're up.
Yeah, so let's see. We're going to present two articles, 10 and 12. John, did you want to do that?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, so.
Sure, if you wouldn't mind sharing. Oh, you want me to share it from my screen, or did you want to pull it up from yours?
Actually, did you send it to me? That's what I was waiting on.
Yes, I did.
Ah, you did. Okay.
Both of them.
Okay. I got it. Okay. If you have it handy, go ahead and do it from yours.
Okay, I'll pull it up.
Yeah.
Okay, bear with me. I'm just getting in it to the...
If you're having trouble, I have it now.
I got it.
Okay.
Let me go back up to the front. Let me just make sure that... Okay, should be seeing Article 10. I'll make it bigger. So.
Thank you.
Let's bring that back just a
little. Very good.
Okay. So just kind of a brief overview of Article 10. I know we've worked on this article previously during the last full book. And I think... I think we might see some familiar language. So I'll kind of point that out as we go. So the first changes go down to line 116 when we talk about the role in the review process of the dean or vice president. This is, we prefer in these sections, the previous language that we had in the 2015-2018 contract, because the AESPs are a very localized document in a localized process. So the new language is our language we haven't had before is introduced in this part. So we removed. Or we're proposing to remove
this. Hey, John, just for a second, can you hit that little paragraph button?
Sure. Sorry.
It's just distracting. Thank you. I appreciate it.
It's okay. I write with it on, so it's something I've been nailed on in my doctoral program in terms of extra spaces and APA formatting and everything. So it's just the force of habit to have that thing on right now. So we're proposing to eliminate after the 1 year. Process. I really think that, if two sides just can't agree, I think there has to be some compromise on one part, and to kind of make the process one-sided towards the university is not a favorable process for our bargaining unit. So we're proposing to strict this.
Are you aware that that provision I think has yet to have been used? Are you aware of that?
I'm not aware of that, but if we don't, that's great, because that means we don't need it.
That's not necessarily true, but I just thought I'd point out that it's not something that the university is abusing, if that was a concern.
So this is new language right here. We know that the ASPs have to be revisited every 5 years. We don't have any objection to that. And then I think in the reopening, in the reopening cycle, it says at any time. So for instance, there's the possibility of either the dean or the faculty reopening the AESPs every year. And that kind of, when we reviewed this language, I think it seems a little excessive. So in terms of if the AESPs really need to be reopened, they can be reopened once by either party. So just limiting the amount of times that the AESPs can be reopened between the five-year interval.
John, we may just say that the reason we're putting this in is because there have been instances, not in academic units, but in other units, where it has been opened every year or very frequently, and that doesn't seem to make sense. Okay, go ahead.
So... down on line 150, this is reinserting this language, because the rules are changing upon ratification of this article, that the process shall begin anew, because we are substantially changing the roles of individuals in the review process. So this language is required again. So this is verbatim language from the 15-18 contract. So we're coming to the part where we're talking about CPE. I know we talked about this in Article 14. I believe this aligns with our current proposal about changing back to shall or may rather than shall, in striking at least once prior to submitting the promotion dossier.
In other words, if we change it there, we'll change it here, right?
Yeah. Correct. And then also for the sustained performance evaluations, we prefer the previous language of 7 years rather than 3 years.
Yeah, let me just ask. We had no idea why it had become 3 years. I don't know if you guys know what we're talking about. And I was looking at that and wondering how it takes place. And apparently it is done automatically. But then we don't see why go through this exercise every 3 years when we had originally 7 years. But you guys can take a look and come up.
Well, we did change it, I think. I mean, there was a rationale for making that change. John, there's a typo in line 271. I don't know if that is in the contract or not, but thank you.
Is it this right here?
There are a few places like that.
Yeah, there's a few places with the spacing is a little...
You can just fix that. That's fine. I don't mind.
Yeah. It is a little wonky, but just because of the nature of the document. But there's no intended...
No, I know there's not. I was just saying while we're here, we might as well, address that.
Got it. Yeah, I did. Thank you.
So one of the things that is of concern to the university is protecting tenure. And maybe Chuck, maybe you'd like to step in on that since you have it and I don't.
Okay. Tenure is really something that the university is very, very interested in protecting. And from time to time, tenure is attacked from the outside. And one of the criticisms of tenure especially is that faculty are given this long-term promise of continued employment, and it does not appear that they are being held accountable to continue to perform after tenure. So with a post-tenure review, a periodic review, that's helpful. 7 years, if there is a person who is not performing well, 7 years is a long time to go with underperformance. So very few faculty are impacted by the post-tenure review. But when we do the post-tenure review, if we do it on a more reasonable basis, we can make an argument to anyone that would criticize tenure that there is a regular review. It takes place every 3 years. If we say it's every 7 years, it's just too long. It doesn't look like we're taking the accountability issue very, very seriously. So that's why we wanted this change last time from 7 to 3. I don't think there are very many people who have felt any difference as a result of that, but it's really important and will help to ensure that, tenure as we know it can remain.
So Chuck, my thing here would be that this is what we're talking about, and I fully understand. I was actually at my older institution involved with this thing, post-tenure review, and it sort of started in North Carolina in 1998 and Florida and so on. So yes, I'm fully aware of why the need to do this. I think whatever we should do, we should look at what the other SUS are doing, and it should be consistent. That would be my take on it, because these numbers are in some ways arbitrary, and so we would like to take a look at what UF and FSU and others are doing and have a uniform thing throughout Florida. That just makes it better for all of us. So my thing would be, let's not quibble over it right now. Let's get back to it after we have some more information.
Okay, and I think what will likely take place, in addition to looking at other institutions around the state. I think it will be important to look at institutions elsewhere and make sure that we're competitive.
Right. No, that also makes sense. Yeah, let's do that.
And then our last proposed change is eliminating Section 10.4. It's already codified in statute. The statute hasn't changed. It's just kind of really unneeded. In the last round, I believe there was more here in terms of university assistance and helping faculty if proficiency in spoken English is a problem. And then that section was removed. So we're just proposing to remove it. And that's the end of Article 10.
So if you propose to remove the proficiency in spoken English, is the intent then if someone is found not to be able to speak proficiently in English despite their education, that we would be unable to terminate them for that?
No, there are something written up already. I mean, you know, whenever...
Right,
go ahead.
Yeah, I think our intention is to follow the law. And that's basically what this language is.
That's where it comes
from. And that's where it comes from, and it's just unneeded.
So, again, I'm back to, if we wanted to terminate someone for that reason, then it would be not grievable to terminate someone for... I'm just not clear.
Yeah, I think if we want to talk about that, what we should do is, you know, if you find something, so if it is a state law which says must, right? Employees must be involved, okay? So obviously it has to be followed. Now, if somebody is falling short, the first thing would be to provide resources so the person can improve. And then we can talk about what happens next.
Okay, is resources something that we're obligated to do in the statute? That's what I guess I'm saying. It looks like you're taking away our requirement to help people.
We don't have it here.
No, okay. The during the last round of negotiations, it was taken away.
see, that is taken off. So we only have the stick and not the carrot.
Okay, I see that. I understand. So you're just saying take the whole thing out.
Yeah, either take the whole thing out, or if you want to get into it, then we have to do both.
Okay. I just want to understand completely. Is that all that you have in mind with removing that language? Because I just want to make sure if we take it out, we're not hurting employees.
No, we are basically saying it's a state law, and there must be something to it then, and then we can look at it that way. And if it's a state law, it doesn't need to be here. And if it is here, we are not providing what you thought we were, because it was taken out last time.
Right. I had forgotten that. And remember the languages being there.
Yeah.
So you're saying that if there's a deficiency, then we could terminate based on incompetence then and be supported by the state. Okay. All right. That's what I needed to know. Thanks.
No, we're not saying that at all. We're saying we follow the law.
We're saying we follow the law. And if the law does not provide, because what does the law say?
Right. So it's one of these things where as Talat said before, there was two parts. It's like, here's the law, and then here's what the university is doing. And then, as you said, you know, it's you know, there's more. Then there's, you know, we kind of made this informational, and we're just on our position is this information doesn't need to be in the contract.
But so I think I heard you say that we would not be able to terminate someone for not being able to speak English. Is that what I heard you say?
I didn't say that.
Okay, because what I said, we could terminate someone for incompetence. You said that, no, that wouldn't be the case.
So I think, you know, Charlie, again, I think this is our proposal here. If we are to do this, then we should add basically what resources will be provided. And then we can, you know, follow up with what will happen. But this doesn't say anything about any efforts being made to help the faculty member overcome this limitation.
Okay. All right. Thank you for explaining. I appreciate it.
Mm-hmm. And Talat, through the chat, I sent.
Yeah, I saw that. And that basically said that they should take test of spoken English.
Yeah.
I know. That is, this is an on, so one question that I may ask is, how many people have been terminated on this provision?
Well, for a faculty member, it'd be really unusual because they have such high, they have such a high bar on their education, right? They have a terminal degree, a lot of them, and then many of them have at least a master's.
Right.
So it's extremely, extremely unusual in that set of people. I'm wondering about people that are not in that capacity.
But see, they wouldn't come into this if they're not teaching. This only applies to people who are teaching.
Let's just move on.
It's fine. It's
let's
fine.
Move on.
Classroom instruction. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
And are there any other questions from Article 10?
No.
Okay.
So John, do you want to continue with 12?
Sure. Give me a second and I will pull it up. And then I'll email you that copy. So you can send it to
I got it actually.
That has that. No, I made the small change on line 271 that Charlie suggested.
Sure.
That typo is not in the original, so that's fine.
Okay, pulling up Article 12. Okay, should be able to see Article 12. Is the Zoom or magnification good enough? Zoom, we're in Zoom.
Can you give it just a teeny tiny bit more?
Sure.
Oh, you need to get glasses.
I am wearing glasses. He went the wrong direction. Okay, thank you, John.
Yeah, you're welcome. We have excellent vision insurance. I just went to the eye doctor last week.
Great. I just went last week too.
So in Article 12, what we did starting on line 20, this is much more of just a more of an organizational change. I know last time we redid how the appointment groups were created, and we just separated C and G and auxiliary. The only substantial change is removing the if practicable in C and G.
So the
and
thing
then
about
also the sorry, tell that. And then if practicable with auxiliary appointments. The rest of the language is the same from status quo.
So the reason for doing this is that there is a difference, as Sherry just mentioned when she was talking about the budget. There's a difference between CNG and auxiliary appointments. And so we wanted to treat them in two different categories. Okay, go ahead. Yeah.
So new language is looking at both kind of tenured and tenured earning employees. And we just want to reinforce with D1 here, with lines 30 through 35, or with line 30, just saying that how tenured employees are terminated, through disciplinary action in Article 16, or if there is a layoff.
Let me add something here. What we are doing here is making the language commensurate with what we see on other campuses. So this is, we are using, for example, A and B that we have here. It's language from UF with some modification.
Correct.
And again, you can, you know, when you take, we can discuss it further if there's a need, but we want our CBA, we all SUS are trying that we align themselves so that it's the similar, very similar rules that are followed across Florida universities.
Yeah, the biggest change here is with our tenure earning or tenure accruing faculty or employees, that basically that they are renewed annually unless they meet these two criteria here. So the first one is the kind of the reorganization, or that would justify non-reappointment. And then the other one is that they receive below expectations from the department chair and dean during two consecutive years. So for instance, if it's year two and year three, if they have a CPE and they're rated below expectations, it may be a clear case that their case for tenure isn't going to be very strong, and that under this provision they could receive a letter of non-reappointment. But I think it's very important to give, and it's our position, it's very important to give this type of guaranteed time to these to these faculty members, so they can fully not worry about year to year, and do a great job and put together a great tenure packet and get tenure at the institution. As Chuck said, tenure is very important.
Wow, the way I'm reading this, and maybe I'm wrong, but the way I'm reading it is that every single tenure earning employee would have the ability to stay until they go up for tenure.
That's by the way, is what happens on most campuses.
Wow.
Okay.
Wow.
But what we're saying is that if they get below expectation, then they, and you get below expectation across the board, there is usually a recommendation then made to the tenure earning faculty about what they need to do to not be below expectation. And if they still continue to be below expectation for a second year, there is reason for not non-reappointment, but not if they are not, if they're doing what they're supposed to do.
That's an amazing expanded benefit. Okay, I don't know why you wouldn't want to keep them under just regular ENG appointments, but okay. All right, thank you.
Okay.
I think that's kind of moving down. We did, so the ENG appointments basically apply to everyone else in the bargaining unit that's on ENG appointments, the non-tenure earning folks such as instructor, lecturers, and librarians, for example. I may be leaving somebody out, but those are the examples that come to mind. Our next change is on line 47. Last time we pushed back the date for notification, and then our proposal moves it back to May 7th at the end of the academic year, and it adjusts the dates on lines 48 and 49 accordingly. And then our last change is to strike the pay option.
So if I may say something just because of what Charlie was saying, and we'll be quick. When there was an issue, and I had gone to Waldrop, the former provost here, and he said he did not think that the university could non-reappointment for a tenure track faculty member and so on. Of course, he did not, he was new here. So this is something that is followed in most places. And there is a difference between all ENG employees, you know, lecturers and instructors, and somebody comes who on a tenure track position. So this is the practice that goes on. So yeah, let's move on.
Talat, excuse me, can you give an example of a place that guarantees a tenure earning faculty member that they will have 6 years in order to put together?
No, not six. And they don't guarantee it at all, but they do give them, they have to, you know, there has to be a warning given. So usually it's a 3-year review, and at the 3-year review, they're given a warning, and a list is made that unless you do such and such and such, you may be not reappointed. So a very concrete process is worked out. And if they don't follow that, then they're not reappointed. And that's what we're asking here.
So to answer Chuck's question directly, this is language from UF.
And basically what we're saying is that you have to give, they are below expectation, you have to have a plan which they should follow, and that plan should be reasonable. If they do not follow, yes, they can be non-reappointed, and they can be fired. But if they do follow, then they should not be. What has happened here is that no such plan has been developed.
Could I add to answer Chuck's question? I know we received that language from UF, but also outside of Florida, this is pretty common, the third and fourth year review. And it's a way for a lot of non-tenure faculty to know if they're going to continue. And I was once at an institution that after a third year review, somebody was released. So it doesn't mean that, oh, they stay all 6 years. It is after the third year, if, you know, they tell you straight up, this is what's going on, and they either dismiss you at that point because you're not working up to par, or they tell you what you need to do so you could stay.
You could scroll up just a little bit. I want to see if the language is in conflict with the ENG provision. I can't quite tell what the
ENG, we say explicitly that this is other ENG employees. Employees not described above.
Okay.
Okay.
I just wanted to make sure that there wasn't a conflict there. So
that's why we put it. That's why we put it
up
exactly.
There. Okay.
Well, I have a question. When you were the chair of the physics department, didn't you follow that procedure that you are actually describing? When the faculty was not performing very well, you, as well as the P&T committee in the department, gave some guidance to the faculty to improve?
So basically the way it happened is that because we didn't have all, so the two things here. One, yes, in the sense that I would sit down with the faculty member and tell them exactly what they needed to do. So for example, we cannot say that you have to get a grant, but we have to say that you have to show that you have submitted such and such proposals. And then we would work out a plan on how many proposals they would submit and how many papers they would publish and graduate students and so on and so forth. And frankly, this is all what I worked out with Mike Johnson. So our idea was that if anyone is below expectation, we have to tell them why they are and what they can do to get out of that. And if they don't, then I think we can fire them.
So
thanks, Charlie, for posting that.
Right.
We modified it to mirror the CPE process here rather than using the overall evaluate the AESP process.
Well, they don't have an AESP process, right?
Right. Instead of using the annual evaluation, for example, I think their language refers to at the bottom, it refers to the overall unsatisfactory. So we tied that on their annual performance evaluation. So we changed that to mirror the CPE process.
So it's not quite apples to apples. I see what you're saying, and I'm not disagreeing with your logic. I'm just saying it's not quite apples to apples because they're still tying it to an annual performance evaluation rather than to the CPE, which would probably work better for us than for them, but, just saying.
So ENG, other ENG employees would not have CPE?
No.
They would have only annual evaluations.
Right.
Well, tenure earning is very special, right? You can't be CNG and tenure earning. That doesn't happen.
No. We're talking about other ENG appointments, right? And so we're talking about lecturers and instructors, other ENG who do not get CPE. They only get annual evaluation, and they don't have permanent appointment.
Yeah, well, this is the University of Florida language is just for the tenure accruing faculty.
Totally. Because it's a reset there, yeah.
So if they get an unsatisfactory evaluation on their annual performance evaluation, they can jettison them because I guess they don't
have... They, in their case, it is annual, and we thought that this is better because it is across the board, and so they have been... So that's why I wanted to say we didn't take exactly UF's language, but then UF's language is more involved because there, if you have annual evaluation, if you get below satisfactory, then there is that issue that you have to be below satisfactory 2 years and all of that. So we will then have to, if we copied exactly what UF does, then we would have to make those changes in our ACEPs as well. And we thought it was better to tie this to cumulative progress evaluation.
Thank you for explaining. I feel like it's very different, but I appreciate the explanation. All right, is that, you can roll back down now, John. I just wanted to check that. You've got it in the right place to not have a conflict there. So, and you're eliminating the idea of payout. What's the rationale for that?
The rationale for that is that if university wants to pay someone out and the faculty member is willing to take the payout, it can be done anytime. But otherwise, it should be both ways. I mean, if the university wants to give a payout and the faculty member does not want the payout, then they should be allowed to be here for the time that is given above. Otherwise, the way it was one way.
Well, you understand that some people that are non-reappointed are not terrifically happy with that decision and may not act in the best, most professional way when they get to that point.
And right. Then there's other methods in the contract to address that.
So I'm thinking of someone in particular who was given another assignment, but yes, okay.
I understand what you're saying, and I will tell you without commenting on the merits or not merits, whether this could be unilateral or not, we will not take out the idea of a payout option. Now, what you would want, I think, is at the time of or following issuance of a notice of non-reappointment to any employee, the university may elect to pay the employee for all of the period as allowed under Florida law, and maybe something to the effect that the employee chooses not to be paid out. They don't have to be, but in order for them to, for that option to even exist for an employee to be paid out, there has to be a statement in the contract that is an option.
That would be fine.
That we will go there, but I'm just saying that we can't eliminate the entire idea of a payout option.
Okay.
Under 215.
Okay, so I understand what you're saying is that unless it is there, you can't make that offer.
We can't make that offer.
Okay, so then we will, and then we'll leave this with you for now.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can, do that. But our sense would be that if we did do it that way, then the employee has also to be willing to accept it.
Mm. Understood.
Yeah, understood. It's clear.
I think that's it, right, John?
Yeah. You can move on to Article 6 if you want now.
These articles are relatively short compared to the some of the other ones that we've been dealing with. So I'll go ahead and stop sharing.
Okay.
We're making good progress. So, right. So then the next last thing was Article 6. So basically, there have been several issues as we've talked about Article 6. And there are a couple of things that we need to understand. So, our main concern with Article 6, because Article 6 was there, 2 years back, 6 years back, it's been there for a long time. So what we don't understand is why the need for adding just Title IX sexual harassment and then UCF's Title IX grievance policy. why was there a need to bring in these Title IX related issues in Article 6? That is something that we don't understand, because you know, if you go to the 2015-18, it doesn't have it, and so Title IX has been in existence for a long time. So why was the need to put that in?
Because last year, the new Title IX regulations went into effect. They are now federal law. We have to obey federal law, and that is the first time that we've had that law. And there is a question that it might be repealed, but we don't know that. And the process of repeal would take, at a minimum, a year to 18 months, probably closer to 18 months. And it hasn't even, the process hasn't been started yet. So we're a long way from getting that process repealed. We have no choice but to follow federal law. So if you know, we had to change everything on the student side the same way. And we've had to redo our regulations and our policy on Title IX. It has been a huge headache for everybody at the university. We hate it, but we have no choice. And this year, the Florida legislature decided that they liked it so much that now we have to have all of our student conduct issues run through this same procedure. So they've essentially decided to turn universities into courts. So we're going to have to provide, I mean, it will be it's a court. You've got attorneys, you've got the equivalent of a judge, the person who oversees the hearing officer, who has to make decisions on issues like relevancy of testimony, which is a legal determination that not even a lot of people who've been to law school would feel really comfortable making. So it's a mess, but we don't have any choice about it.
So would it be possible for us to have a separate article that just addresses the Title IX issues? Because you know what we could do, we could separate it from this. That doesn't cause us as much headache. And if it goes away, it goes away. I mean, I see where you're coming from. I just think it's so confusing, and
it is.
And it is just so, you know, I mean, everything is like, I mean, of course, it smells of an era, which we hope is over, But so one possible, and I, you know, this idea came to me just now, so we haven't talked about it in our caucus, but maybe the way out is to have a separate article, and we can say right here that this one deals with everything other than Title IX issues, and then have a separate one on Title IX.
Well, I hadn't thought about that. Well, we had actually thought about that. I don't know.
I mean, what we would do, it would make it simpler, because remember, so our issues were, and as you mentioned that the last time that, yeah, I mean, we, you know, that this is not grievable. That was one thing. And we talked about what could be grieved. And then the other one was sending everything to OIE with its long timeline. So if we could shorten the timeline. So if we handled all of that and took the Title IX out of this, I think we can come up with something to you guys. You can respond, and I think we can probably get to an agreement.
Well, I would like to talk that over with OIE and with Sarah, and we'll get back to you on that.
Okay, so that could be, well, let's think about that. That makes life, this is one of the ones that your blood pressure goes up when you read it, you know.
Oh, if you actually read the regulation, your blood pressure would go up a whole lot more. Yes.
And that's basically what goes on when we try to look at it. It just doesn't make any sense. When we know it's not coming from you, but we need. So maybe to talk it through, and if that can be done, that would be helpful.
Okay.
So anything, what else do we have? I can't believe we might even be done before 3:30.
That would be most welcome. The next thing on the agenda is for you to talk about what happens next time, I think is what you wanted.
Well, I just, you know, we don't have to even talk about it here, but for me, it is very helpful, Charlie, when you send me what we might be doing. So, for example, we are looking at Article 13 right now.
Okay.
And so 13 is in the works. And then we probably will take up one more from the list. But the ones that we have, the six that we, 4, 8, 13, 16, 19, and 24, I got the impression that you guys were expecting proposals from us. Does that mean that you are okay with the status quo?
Not necessarily. I think 19 is something that's going to take some time.
What is 19?
We will make a proposal on 19, and that's going to be, I'm sorry to say this, but you're going to have some of the same problems with 19 that you have with 6.
Okay.
Except we're not going to be able to make it a separate article, I don't think, because of changes in state law that have impacted that. And, you know, one of them being the, yes, I know, the
I'm hoping that will die too.
I'm not thinking that it will, because the BOG was working on a regulation, which they have now finished. It hasn't been, you know, they have to go through their whole process, just like we do, having it, you know, sent out for review and all of that and adopted. But I was on a call with the BOG General Counsel the other day, and she told us that they went up to Capitol Hill they were supposed to do a presentation to the governor on something, some legislative leaders on something else. And the first thing out of his mouth was, what are the universities doing about the foreign influence bill? Are they working on it? Do they understand how important this is? So I do think there will be some changes around the edges of that, because it's just poorly drafted, as is a lot of stuff that comes out of Tallahassee. But the core of that bill is not going to change anytime soon, at least not within the next legislative session. We are going to have more reporting, more screening, all those bad things that, you know, you've been hearing about. And some of that's going to have to find its way into Article 19. So, yeah.
Talat, can I ask you a question?
Sure.
Sherry, do you have a rough timeline of when you would be ready to present 19 so we can adequately vet the proposal?
No, I don't, because the law goes into effect July 1st, which is tomorrow, but we've got a lot. We have 2 or 3 internal working committees working on it. There's a group of attorneys from around the state that are working on it. And as I said, the BOG has just put out their regulation. There's a lot going on with that we're all scrambling to meet to just get the basic stuff in place by tomorrow.
Exactly.
There'll be a lot of work to, you know, backfill then once you've met the kind of like the house is on fire. Things that have to be something has to be in place by July 1st. There's still going to be a lot of work that has to be done to fill that in. I mean, I would say it will be another month or two before. I'm sorry about that, John. I wish I could get to it sooner.
Well, it's okay. We understand. You know,
yeah.
I think we understand when it comes from entities not in our control. I think the essence of my question was just try to, you know, to allow, you know, the conversations we're having around Article 6, of course, you know, take time and outside expertise,
right,
in terms of this. So I was just trying to say if, like, you know, maybe, you know, and like Talat here, I'm kind of shooting from the hip, where, you know, maybe in terms of what Article 19 becomes, we can do the necessary minimums in this round of negotiations, and perhaps we could discuss reopening 19 once either clarification or processes become available, so it doesn't hold up full book rather than, maybe extending out full book.
That might be a possibility, because I think that there will, we're going to be working on this for a while. And, we've got other, the legislature was very active this term. We've got the freedom of speech statute that came out. Everybody's going to be taping your classes, and there's just a lot of stuff out there that we're trying to implement. It's like drinking from fire hose.
Right now. So I think maybe that's an approach we can explore. As soon as we receive your proposal, is having that conversation of what's statutorily required and what needs to take place versus maybe what the process either evolves into or is de-evolved in some essence. So, who knows? But I think maybe looking at that approach.
So is this something that we couldn't go to the federal level? I mean, this is the only state that is imposing this. And so it is.
I don't think we can go to the federal. Well, I mean, you can try, but if you pay much attention to what's going on in the news, the Congress and the Biden administration, everybody seems to have sort of drawn a bead on China now.
I know. It's ridiculous.
And there have been some legitimate reasons. I mean, they have legitimately been stealing our intellectual property.
Yeah, sure. But
there's not much. I mean, I think the Florida law is broader than it needed to be, in my opinion. But it's going to be hard. Nobody's going to have much sympathy for legislation at the federal level that wants to roll back these types of provisions. And, they're not going to want to get into micromanaging the state governments either. So
that's will we be paying a price?
Oh, well, yeah. And I think you will see more of these types of laws coming out of other states. We just happen to be the first out of the gate, but I think there'll be more of them.
Okay. So we will definitely be coming. We'll be already working on 13. We'll probably take a couple more.
Okay.
And then out of the.
And then we owe you some responses as well from the last session. So.
Last sessions, yeah.
Okay.
So we'll work on those.
Well, I know it seems like it's taking forever, but honestly, John, you can say this from the last round. We're moving a whole lot faster, and Ioana, we're moving a whole lot faster this time than we did last time.
Yeah. Very close on the article 20, actually. I think we can come to agreement on that. Yeah, it's very positive.
Yeah.
I mean, if we got that one TA, we're about halfway through the articles? And last time, I think we had two at this point TA'd, so.
Well, the thing is that the list that we have, which we've all looked at and not totally agreed, we are not all that far.
No, we're not even as far apart as we have been in the past. So
And those are just things that we have to tinker with at the end. So we're really talking about 7 articles that we have to work on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So
I forgot something, but I think Article 18 needs to be added to that list of articles we still have to address.
Inventions and works?
I thought that was
18. We TA'd it.
Okay.
No, we didn't want to touch it again after the last cycle.
Hallelujah.
So I did have one maybe last question. So in terms of the list, I think Article 4 is management rights. Are you going to be bringing a proposal to the table or?
At some point.
Okay. At some point. Okay.
What is 8? Do we know?
8 is appointment.
Appointment.
So 8 is something that we could look at next because it will go with 13.
13 and our response with 9.
Yeah. So maybe 8 and 13 is what we look at.
Can I just
we have our target then.
Yep. I just wanted to ask one question, a point of clarification for Sherry.
So
I'm trying to understand, why does the language of the recent Florida statute, because we don't put all the Florida statute or Florida law language into our CBA, so why does this in particular have to be 19?
Well, not all of the language does, but there are certain reporting requirements that, you know, which is, that's what 19 is basically, conflicts reporting and outside interest reporting. And there's some changes in the law that will need to be put in, I think we're going to need to put into 19 because of that.
Okay.
No, we are not about to put in all the stuff in 19.
Okay, that's what I wanted to know.
Oh my gosh, no. That bill is just, no. But there are just a few basic things that I think we're going to have to put in there. And there were some changes from last year, too, that we put in regulation, but we haven't gotten them in the CBA yet. So we're going to have, so, because we didn't have that article open at the time. So, yeah.
Okay, and then another thing, because sometimes, is this going to be a policy before we complete negotiating the CBA?
Well, there will be an emergency policy done on this, but I don't think that there'll be maybe an emergency reg, but that will be done. But again, it's one of those things that's going to be, we'll have something out there, but it'll have to be updated, you know, as we develop, as we work through the process.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you, guys. I think that's it from us, right, folks?
Is Correct. There anything else that you wanted to talk about for our next meeting? But it's posted. We should be rolling along. If not, we can stop recording and move on.
Yeah, I think we're done.
Okay, great.
Sounds
See
good.
You.
Thanks so much.